This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. On a 6-3 vote, the Supreme Court today upheld Oregon's assisted suicide law, the only one of its kind in the country. The majority opinion, written by Justice Anthony Kennedy, said that then-Attorney General John Ashcroft overstepped his authority when he tried to use federal drug laws to prevent distribution of controlled substances for the purpose of physician-assisted suicide. In that context, Ashcroft argued, the drugs have no legitimate medical purpose. In a dissent, Justice Antonin Scalia wrote, if the term legitimate medical purpose has any meaning, it surely excludes the prescription of drugs to produce death. Voters in Oregon approved the so-called Death with Dignity law twice. It took effect in 1997. So far, it's been used by about 200 people. To begin with, we'll take your questions on the legal and medical issues raised by today's decision. In our next segment, we'll focus more on ethical, moral, and political questions. So if you want to know more about legal and medical arguments, our number here is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-8255. Talk. We also have a new email address as of today, talk@npr.org. Again, that's talk@npr.org. Later in the program, we'll talk about the fight against poverty with former Senator and Vice Presidential candidate John Edwards. But first, the Supreme Court and physician-assisted suicide. We begin with legal and medical questions. Joining us by phone is David Savage, Supreme Court correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Nice to have you back, David.
Hi, Neil.
And NPR health policy correspondent Julie Rovner, who's with us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Julie.
Hi, Neil.
And David, let's begin with you. It appears that the court saw this less in terms of morality or ethics and more as a states' rights issue.
Yes, that's right. The big question here sort of was, who gets to decide this issue? Is it the Oregon, in this case, Oregon's voters, or is it John Ashcroft, the Attorney General? It had been sort of assumed Oregon passed the Death with Dignity Act in 1994, and it allowed terminally ill patients to get medication. And it has sort of always been understood that the practice of medicine and licensing of doctors is a state matter, not a federal matter. There is, however, the federal drug control laws that tries to keep a rein on drug trafficking and keep physicians out of the business of prescribing illegal drugs. When he became Attorney General, Ashcroft said that the Oregon's doctors were essentially violating the federal drug control laws by prescribing drugs for, what he said, an illegitimate medical purpose. So in the end, the legal battle really became a test of sort of who gets to decide this issue, Oregon or the U.S. Attorney General.
And in his majority opinion today, Justice Kennedy seemed to directly refute Attorney General Ashcroft's reasoning.
Yes, he said it was an extraordinary claim of authority to suddenly say that the 1970 drug control laws gave the Attorney General the power to sort of make these medical decisions, to sort of overrule states and say what is good medical practice and what's illegitimate medical practice. Kennedy said that Congress never envisioned that when they passed this law.
And the issue of the right to die, did that come up?
Well, in the end, it was always what this was about, but it was not truly a decision about sort of a notion of a right to die. In 1997, though, the Supreme Court issued a decision that sort of could be read two different ways. On the one hand, the court said there's no constitutional right to die. But the justices also said this is really a matter for each state to decide on its own. And I think a lot of people at that time thought that the court was saying that Oregon was certainly free to decide we want terminally ill people to have this option. And it wasn't, as I say, it wasn't until Ashcroft became Attorney General that there was a serious move that the federal government was going to try to, in effect, reverse the state's decision here.
And Julie Rovner, let me bring you in at this point. The state also put in a lot of conditions on this law, which certainly made it difficult in practice and forced anybody who was thinking about this to think twice and three times before they went ahead.
Absolutely. There are a whole string of requirements that go with this, starting obviously with you must be 18 years of age or older, an Oregon resident. The doctor has to be licensed to practice in Oregon. You have to be diagnosed with a terminal illness that has with a prognosis of less than 6 months to live. A second doctor has to confirm that opinion. A second doctor also has to concur that the person is has the ability to make such a decision. The patient has to be counseled about pain management options, other possibilities, hospice, other palliative care. They must be there must be two verbal requests separated by 15 days, plus there must be a written request witnessed by two people who are not either family members nor primary caregivers. And that's just, there's more, but there are a lot of protections built in, which is why this has been relatively little used. Only 208 people have actually ingested drugs in order to kill themselves using these prescriptions since the law took effect. It actually, in practice, it didn't take effect until 1998 because, in fact, the federal government did initially try to block it.
But. Anyway, going back, though, physician-assisted suicide, lay people only know one line of the Hippocratic Oath, but it's the first line, first, do no harm.
And that's what's interesting about this is that Congress tried to get into this, and I think it's important in looking at this court decision, it doesn't really end the whole fight. Congress could step in and amend the Controlled Substances Act to say this is not a legitimate medical purpose. All this decision says is that the Attorney General can't read that into it, but Congress could certainly change the law. But I think it's important here to talk about the idea that I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
Well, I was going to ask. I mean, it's physician-assisted suicide.
Oh, that's right.
Do the physicians play, what part do the physicians play?
Excuse me. And in Congress's initial law, the American Medical Association opposed it because they said they worried that it would deter doctors from actually prescribing pain medication if they felt like they had a federal, you know, DEA agent looking over their shoulder at every prescription they wrote, that it could end up actually hurting people who simply wanted pain medication, not to assist in a suicide. The AMA actually endorsed a subsequent version of the bill, which also failed to become law. So doctors are involved in this. The American Medical Association is on record opposing physician-assisted suicide. But the fact is that there are some doctors willing to do it. And there's nothing in the Oregon law that requires doctors to do this, and many don't. Same thing, actually, with pharmacists who are allowed to not fill these prescriptions in some cases.
But the actual act itself must be self-administered. The doctor can't do it.
Yes, and that's part of the law's protection, that it's unlike Dr. Kevorkian, who was sort of there and present and really assisting the doctor, that it must be administered by the patient.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. Again, we're talking about legal and medical issues right now. 800-989-8255. We also have that new email address, talk@npr.org. And let's hear from Marie. Marie's calling us from Miami.
Hi, can you hear me well?
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering, I'm not very knowledgeable about the laws, but the only other procedure I know where medication can be prescribed to terminate a life is the issue of abortion, and I was wondering if the law that protects the privacy, which entitles people to get an abortion, could somehow also be used to protect the right of people to have assisted suicide.
Marie, your phone line is very poor, so I'm going to hang up on you, but I'll relay your question to David Savage, who may have had trouble understanding it. Marie said that the only other law of which he was aware where prescriptions doctors could intervene to end a life would be abortion. Was the reasoning on this case the same privacy issues that would come up in an abortion case, David Savage?
No, it wasn't at all, although she's right to think that it is a logical matter. As a logical matter, you would think if the Constitution gave individuals a privacy right to make personal decisions about their lives, which is what the Supreme Court said in Roe versus Wade regarding abortion, you would think that it would also apply to someone who is, say, 75 years old and dying of cancer and only has a month to live. You would think that person has a privacy right. But as I say, the Supreme Court actually rejected that notion in 1997, and I think really because of the legacy of Roe versus Wade. That is, the justices don't want to make these controversial decisions, and they said very explicitly, we're going to leave this to the states and their voters to let them make their own decisions. So as a matter of logic, yes, but as a matter of law, no, not in this case.
And if in this case physicians are allowed to prescribe controlled substances for this purpose, for assisted suicide, what's the difference between that and physicians prescribing medical marijuana?
Well, I suppose one difference is that, as you know, that issue was up before the Supreme Court last year.
And they decided the other way.
Yes, and I think the reason the majority went the other way is that marijuana was judged to be a drug with no legitimate benefits, no medical benefits, and it was the Controlled Substances Act had made marijuana illegal across the board. That's how the law was interpreted. This is a question about the use of legal drugs, and some of the justices, I think, thought this was a different matter. This is legal drugs and how they were used, and they were inclined to defer to a state and the state's doctors. And also, Neil, in regard to your comment about sort of doctors and harm, I do think that there are some doctors who would think that I have a patient here who's dying. It's not a suicide in the sense of a healthy person who wants to end their lives. I've talked to some of these people in writing about this case, and there are people who very much want to live, but they have a cancer and that the treatment has not worked and their time is very short. They are worried about being helpless and in pain, and that's what causes them to say, if I'm helpless and in great pain, I want to be able to have this medication to end my life a few weeks early.
And finally, David, what can we make of the split on the court on this? 6-3, the three justices in dissent were Justices Scalia, who wrote the dissent, Clarence Thomas, and the new Chief Justice of the United States, John Roberts.
I suppose my cynical comment is that the states' rights movement seems to not always apply to conservatives when it's blue states making decisions that they don't particularly approve of. I do think the big news in that is John Roberts. This was his first big case, his first big decision, and he sided squarely with the Bush administration and the social conservatives and away from the notion of a sort of libertarian, let the states make their own decisions. So it's an interesting statement on Roberts' part by joining Scalia in this case.
David Savage, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
David Savage is Supreme Court correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He joined us by phone from his office here in Washington. Julie Rovner, thanks as always to you.
My pleasure.
Julie is NPR's health policy correspondent. She was with us here in Studio 3A. We're talking about today's ruling by the Supreme Court, which upheld Oregon's death with dignity law. When we come back from a break, we'll address wider moral, ethical, and political questions raised by today's decisions. Our number, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. That new email address, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today, the Supreme Court dismissed an administration's attempt to punish doctors who helped terminally ill patients to die. In a 6-3 decision, the court upheld Oregon's Death with Dignity law. Oregon is the only state in the union that currently has such a law. If you have questions about ethics or morality or the politics of assisted suicide, give us a call. Our number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN@npr.org. Joining us now from his office in Atlanta is Jay Sekulow. He's chief counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, which filed briefs in support of the government's position challenging the Oregon law. And it's nice to have you back on Talk.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate being here.
What's the reaction to today's decision?
Disappointed. The fact is that the federal government had a comprehensive legislative scheme in place regarding the federally controlled substances, and legitimate narcotics were being utilized for an illegitimate purpose, and that was ending life. And I think what Justice Scalia said in his dissent, joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Clarence Thomas, was correct. He said if the term legitimate medical purpose has any meaning, it surely excludes the prescription of drugs to produce death. And I think that's absolutely correct. Unfortunately, he was not the majority. So this is now a situation where Oregon right now is the only state that has this in play. But I think you're going to see others. And I think you'll see states taking very different approaches on this. The difficulty is you've got a federal comprehensive legislation in place here, and that presents some of the problem.
And would you expect this issue to come back in Congress as well?
I don't think you should exclude Congress from this. Having said that, I think Congress has got a pretty full plate right now, and whether this will reach that list, I just don't know.
Mm-hmm. States' rights is an issue that many conservatives trumpet, and in this case, the court's reasoning, at least in terms of the majority, was that this was not up to the Attorney General to decide. It's up to the states.
Yeah, it was interesting because the pitch that Oregon made was a states' rights pitch, which normally, as you said, Neil, conservatives like the idea of states having some independent leeway on things like this. The difficulty with the states' right argument here was that you had a comprehensive federal scheme. I mean, these are, after all, scheduled narcotics controlled by the federal government. So you've got a federal scheme that was in place. And this was not, in my view, a states' rights case, but rather the states ignoring a legitimate command of the federal government in something like controlled substances.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255. And we'll begin with John. John's calling from Manchester, New Hampshire.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I haven't read the opinion, but I did hear a reporter indicate that the Justice Kennedy's majority opinion had contained a statement that, or to the effect of, the Attorney General had no special expertise in the area under review. I'm just wondering if that was a tweak to some of the right-to-life advocates, because that same language has been, or that same phrase has been used by Justice Scalia in evaluating the court's ability to decide abortion cases.
Jay Sekulow?
Yeah, great question. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Justice Kennedy's majority opinion pointed out that, you know, it's far be it from the federal government to control medical practice in an individual state, that's really in the state's prerogative. I think where he got it wrong, though, and this is my view, obviously, and we didn't persuade a majority of the court, where he got it wrong was this is not a situation where the federal government hasn't exercised jurisdiction. For instance, in the civil rights issue, I mean, the states' right argument was utilized, of course, in some context to deny blacks equal citizenship and equal rights. But the federal government had a legislative scheme in place, legitimately so, with the Civil Rights Act, saying, no, that, look, these people are entitled to rights, and we're going to ensure that it happens. So state rights don't trump a recognized federal right, and I think that's what really happened here. The federal government has said you don't use these narcotics to end life, and the court today gave the states a pass.
John, thanks for the call.
Okay.
And Jay, do you, as some right-to-life advocates would argue, that this is the slippery end of the wedge, that this is the road to euthanasia?
Well, it makes you concerned. If you read the opinion, it does raise that concern. I think, though, it's clear to say this is the beginning of all of this. This is not the end of this litigation. The court has not yet recognized, and I don't think they will, a constitutional right to assisted suicide. But these ancillary issues are going to continue to come up, and I think we've got to be realistic that this is the beginning of litigation, not the end for this issue.
Let's go to another caller. This is Omari. Omari calling from Camden in New Jersey.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes. You know, I fail to understand that we are really forgetting the purpose of training doctors. If we are training doctors, we are spending more money to train good doctors to save lives but not to take life. So I don't know why do we have to come up with a suicidal helping people to take their life while we don't make that life.
Well, that brings up a question that was also addressed by, interestingly, by Justice Scalia.
He said, but you know what? I mean, those people, we take lives. I mean, we take laws to our hands to take life. We did not bring life to this world, and we decide about life. I think that's unfair because we don't know how life started. I mean, we can believe on science,
right,
but still there is a lot of complication. We are trying to be more smart than the person who created life.
Okay, Omari, let's get a response from Jay Sekulow.
Well, it brings up a point that I agree with, and that is the American Medical Association, although interestingly they supported the state of Oregon here, but not because they supported assisted suicide. In fact, in previous cases, the AMA has taken the exact contrary position. They do not support assisted suicide. But what was interesting here, they said they didn't want the federal government overseeing these doctors. But I think this brings up a point. The doctor, the Hippocratic Oath, was supposed to be the whole oath that was given for medical doctors was to preserve life and protect life. Here you're using a narcotic to, not as a byproduct that might end life, it is to intentionally end human life, and I think that is the slippery slope you've got to be careful with.
Let's see if we can get Tony on the line. Tony's calling from Phoenix.
Yeah, hello, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay, we keep on going on and on about, you know, whether this is to take life or not to take life, states' rights, but, you know, ultimately, by Oregon State, the law, they go through a lot of steps to make sure this is what the individual wants, the individual's rights. And on top of that, you know, the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm. Well, where do they draw the line between, okay, there's physical harm, but what about mental and emotional harm that's being caused to these people that are suffering through insane, you know, amounts of pain and discomfort and emotional, you know, who has the right to draw that line?
Go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, you bring up a legitimate question, but you know what's interesting here? Under this Oregon law, doctors can prescribe the drugs, but they couldn't actually administer them. Now, what does that tell you about this view that we're going to allow a doctor to prescribe a drug but not administer because if he administers it, what's happening? Well, he's violating basically his own oath. And I think this points to the nature of this problem. Yes, you had to have two doctors certify, but do we allow, is this the direction we're going in? Because in Europe, and we have offices in Europe, the issue of euthanasia becomes a medical but more likely a business decision. They look at the age of the patient, how much it's going to cost, and they make economic decisions about euthanasia, whether voluntary or not.
But getting back to this case of physician-assisted suicide, Jay, I don't have the number in front of me, but I'm told many more people than of the 208 who have used this process, many more people than that ask for the prescription just in case, and then in the end did not use it.
Did not use it.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, what does that tell you?
It said they wanted it in case it became overwhelming. In their case, it didn't.
I think it also tells you that these decisions are difficult. But you got to go back to the fact that in these particular cases, in the Oregon law, the doctor can prescribe the medication, but he can't administer it. That means there's a taint to this that is significant. Or else, you would let the doctor prescribe and administer the narcotic if it was necessary or if it was a good practice. But there's a reason why the medical profession in Oregon said we can prescribe but not administer. And that is, to me, shows the slippery slope that may well be well on its way.
Tony, thanks very much for the call.
Well, actually, can I one more thing? I mean,
go ahead.
Respond to what he just talked about. You know, all of that's well and good, but, you know, doctors prescribe other forms of narcotic and medication for other reasons,
sure,
in quantities that are easily, you know, could be used to commit suicide for somebody who's not terminally ill.
Misused, though, not used for the that's not the purpose upon which they were being prescribed. Here, the difference is these are being prescribed for the purpose of ending life, but yet there's this prohibition of the doctor actually engaging in it, which mm-hmm. to me shows the nature of what you're really dealing with here.
Now, there's also a situation in other states, and Jay, I think you know this well, of wink, wink, nod, nod, nudge, nudge.
Sure.
We're going to provide you drugs, and what you do with them is up to you. But
right.
That also exists. Tony, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
And Jay Sekulo, thank you very much for
thank
being
with us
today.
Thank you for having me back. I appreciate it.
Jay is a chief counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice. His group filed briefs in support of the government's position in the Oregon assisted suicide case. For another view, we're joined now by Eli Stutzman. He's an attorney who helped draft Oregon's Death with Dignity Act, also a member of the legal team that argued the case before the United States Supreme Court. He joins us by phone from his office in Portland, and congratulations, I guess.
Thank you. Thank you.
And you must be very pleased.
Very pleased.
Concerns have been expressed, and I think we just heard some of them from Jay Sekulo, about this being a slippery slope. Do you feel that's true?
Not at all. I think the slippery slope argument reveals the impoverishment of our opponent's arguments. The slippery slope argument is essentially saying we're not concerned about what's happening today, but what might happen in the future. This law has been in effect in Oregon since 1998, and none of the arguments made by our opponents have come true. The law has worked well. It's rarely used, and it's delivered great benefits to our state and also the debate over end-of-life care nationally.
Mm-hmm. Why was the decision made to argue this on states' rights as opposed to privacy?
Well, the states have always traditionally regulated medicine, and this is a case where the drugs that are used are lawful drugs. They're lawful in all 50 states. The only difference is that in Oregon, we changed the criminal code and we changed the medical standard of care to allow a physician to help a patient at the end of life hasten their death in very narrow circumstances. In other words, we are regulating medicine in Oregon. And the states have always regulated medicine, and the essence of this opinion is that that is the proper role of the states, and that the Attorney General, when he attempted to trump that decision in Oregon, far exceeded the bounds of his office.
Mm-hmm. This does, as Jay Sekulow and David Savage before him speculated on, this sort of a reversal of the normal, sort of constitutional opinion. People from states' rights are not frequently heard as an argument from Oregon.
Well, they aren't, and it really wasn't the essence of the case here either. The essence of the case was interpreting this federal statute. And it's true that the question was who decides. It's clear under the federal statute that this power was never conferred upon the Attorney General, an unelected executive official, to make these health policy decisions. And so, on the one hand, the opinion does recognize that the states have traditionally regulated medicine. They will continue to do so. On the other hand, it was truly interpreting the statute and noting that the federal actor exceeded his federal power.
We're talking with Eli Stutzman, one of the drafters of the Death with Dignity Act, which was upheld today by the United States Supreme Court. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, and our new email address is talk@npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another listener on the line. This is Amy. Amy calling from New York.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
I was calling because I'm familiar with hospice care, and I'm questioning, when I hear the conversations about assisted suicide, I never really, in terms of a patient being in pain and dying of cancer, I never hear the association with hospice care referred to, which I know is able to handle a lot of patients' problems in terms of palliative care and comfort care.
Mm-hmm.
And I was curious as to why you think it's not brought up as an alternative to assisted suicide.
Eli Stutzman?
Certainly, and thank you for the question. It is brought up in every single case in Oregon. The Oregon Death with Dignity Act specifically provides that the physician will counsel and ensure that all the alternatives are made available, and expressly specifies hospice care. And we are very strong supporters of hospice in Oregon. We think it's a wonderful program. It's under-resourced. It needs to be better financed and funded. We support it wholeheartedly here, and we have great hospice in Oregon.
Oh, that's great to hear. Well, thank you very much.
Amy, thanks very much for the call. And it's probably worth reviewing. We mentioned it earlier with Julie Rovner, but there are any number of conditions which a patient who wants to avail him or herself of this possibility has to go through before it can happen.
That's right. That's right. It's a very narrowly drawn statute. It's intended to make this end-of-life option available to terminally ill patients that have essentially verified their condition and have had a full range of treatment options, and it's worked well. It's helped the very tough cases, and it's delivered a lot of comfort for the state.
I wonder, there is now a political element to this. The Supreme Court has found the Oregon law constitutional. Do you expect other states to take this up? Do you expect to go back into the U.S. Congress with this issue?
One of the benefits of today's opinion is that we've had a wonderful experience here in Oregon since this law was passed in 94 and since it was first implemented in 98, and all the data bears that out. There's been a cloud hanging over it, and that's been this litigation, and this opinion today lifts that cloud. And so it to the extent that the data in Oregon is positive, but others have been reluctant to follow because of the litigation, that reluctance now has been abated, and that's good. As far as the fight returning to the Congress, I don't doubt that there'll be another fight somewhere. We have continually debated and fought on this issue since 1994. We've been to the state ballot twice. We've been to the United States Congress twice, two sessions. We've litigated in federal court two times, first time to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, this time to the Supreme Court. So we've always had a challenge. Our victories continue to improve and become larger over time, and the opportunities to challenge us, of course, smaller. But I'm sure there'll still be another fight somewhere.
And one last question. Jay Sekulow, when we were talking to him, said, look, if this was really kosher, doctors would be allowed to do it. This law specifically says doctors are not permitted to do it, that the medicine must be self-administered. What about his argument that there's a taint here?
Yeah, thank you for raising that. I mean, first of all, most medications are self-administered by patients, and that's not unusual. Secondly, the point of that prohibition in Oregon, it's one of the many safeguards. The point here is that the patient is in control. The patient is competent and conscious in making their own decisions. And by imposing that requirement on the patient. It's just another safeguard. It's a very popular safeguard in Oregon, and it works well, and it has nothing to do with taint. The arguments against the Oregon Death with Dignity Act are as weak as that type of argument and the slippery slope. And in a political context, when that's all your opponents have to throw at you, it's not much.
Eli Stutzman, thanks again, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Eli Stutzman, one of the drafters of the Death with Dignity Act and a member of the legal team that presented the case, Gonzalez versus Oregon, before the United States Supreme Court, which voted 6-3 today to uphold the physician-assisted suicide law in Oregon. When we come back from a short break, we're going to be joined by former senator and vice presidential candidate John Edwards, who will join us to talk about his new job, fighting against poverty. If you'd like to join that conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. That new email address again, talk@npr.org. Back after the break, I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.